this one for the homemakers. Hey, this one for the homemakers. Hey, dance if you a homemaker. Hey, this one for the homemakers. This one.
Hey y'all, welcome to Patriarchy Country, where we are throwing back the curtain on what life is like when you're a member of the Patriarchal Wives Club. I do like to always stress that we are talking about a biblical patriarchy here. So this is a patriarchy country where the sandwiches are always made, but the women are allowed to have opinions. I am Patriarchy Hannah, and today I am joined by a very special guest. This is my friend Sarah. She is a heathen feminist. She's a heathen feminist, and she has a lot of questions about my life, about biblical patriarchy. And so I said, hey, let's just talk about it. And that's what we're going to do. What's up, Sarah? How are you?
Hello. Thank you. Heathen feminist is now going to be my new name. And everybody in my family will have to refer to me as that from now on. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I remember the other day that you said you only wanted to be referred to that way from now on. And so there.
It's wonderful. Thank you.
All right, you guys, I'm going to start us off with some scripture as normal. And this is going to be 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 7. Love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. So, Sarah, I picked that verse to start us off with because I think I get the impression a lot, and this is something that I would acknowledge is a problem, that when people think of traditional relationships, the submissive wife is always the first thing on their mind, but the Bible tells us also that husbands are to love their wives, and maybe we don't talk sometimes enough about what love actually is. Would you say that that's maybe some messaging that's missing from your point of view?
I think that it's interesting that the scripture that you read, I have heard at many, many weddings, heathen weddings that you may,
No doubt.
You're right. And I think people forget that that is a scripture in the Bible. But as far as your lifestyle, which to me seemed very foreign before you and I started speaking, I thought of it as more abusive, that your husband forced you to submit to a lifestyle that you normally would never have done so had it not been for him. But getting to know you, I don't believe that's the case anymore, nor do I believe that it's abuse anymore. And you've really done a lot to change my mind in that aspect, because you are a very strong woman and somebody that I can look to and respect. And I would not have said that to.
Well, thank you so much. We're making progress, you guys. We are making progress with the heathens. I'm okay if people don't agree with the way that we live or our worldview. I mean, I'm not okay. Obviously, I think we're right. So I want you to agree with me, but you have the right not to do that for sure. But I would like people to understand that it's not awful. And that was kind of how I ended up. That is sort of how Patriarchy Hannah came to be in the first place. Just so everybody is aware, Sarah and I have already had some of the conversations that we're going to have today. I've already answered these questions for her, privately, but I felt like some of the things she told me about people's perceptions of me, my Twitter, my life, what it was so mind-blowing to me that I was like, this woman, like, this needs to be a podcast. I wish I had just recorded our first conversation.
Oh my gosh.
But you had an anecdote. You had an anecdote that you wanted to share. So go ahead with that.
Well, yes, I do. How you came across my timeline on Twitter, the very first time I ever saw you was when your pinned tweet about making your husband a sandwich and eating, which was just this hilarious tweet, but it was sent to me by several of my very feminist friends. And they said, can you believe this woman? And I chuckled, shrugged my shoulders and said, this has to be a parody. And at first I assumed you were a man, that this was an account run by a man trying to be funny about feminism. And so I sort of shrugged my shoulders. We laughed. I said, it's totally a man that is running this account because no woman would ever say these things. And then the next time, another one of your tweets was sent to, we have a female group chat, and it was sent. And I had this head tilt moment where I thought, maybe it is a woman and maybe she's not joking. And then I saw you in a space, and I went into a space and I just listened. And it took about 10 or 15 minutes before you finally spoke. And I was like, it's a woman. It's a woman. And I don't know if she's for real. But here's the part where I'm ashamed of. And I'll be very honest. I had assumed, I'd made a lot of incorrect assumptions about you. One, that you would be uneducated, because no educated woman would ever submit herself to a man in the way that you have, and I was wrong. You are quite educated, and you are very intelligent. And two, that you couldn't possibly live up to the words that you were, you couldn't possibly practice what you were preaching, because it would be too difficult. And in the conversations that I've had with you, I was also wrong with that as well. I believe very much that you do practice what you preach. And three, I had assumed that you were trapped in an abusive relationship. And I was completely prepared, Hannah, before we had our phone conversation, I was completely prepared for me to get this signal, like, blink twice if you need help, and I would be on a plane going to rescue you, and I would be hoisted on the shoulders of my feminist friends that I had saved you from this terrible relationship. But you're not in that abusive situation. I find you to be a very happy and content woman. And so you sort of shattered some of these barriers in my mind that I had for what your lifestyle must be.
I am dying at the idea of, like, you being the, I'm the woman who rescued patriarchy.
You know, that was good. You know, I had already had my like Twitter thread written out. I rescued patriarchy Hannah. She is now safe.
She's at an undisclosed location.
Exactly. I have her at the feminist compound, and everything will be fine. She's being deprogrammed.
Yeah, just FYI, if that happened, my husband would find me.
Oh, he'd be battling an army of feminists, and he'd probably point, laugh, and push us all to the side.
Yeah, and he would. He'd be like, where is my wife? Why get out of my face? Bring me my wife. That is so funny.
But that is, you know, we're laughing and joking, but that is very much the perception that you must be dumb and abused. And that is not the case.
It is not the case. I appreciate you saying that. I mean, sometimes I'm kind of dumb, but I'm definitely not abused.
You are never dumb. And I would worry more about Tony's safety if he ever abused you. Yeah,
that is true. I have a lot of brothers. It's very interesting to me because, one, in my mind, it's like I'm literally just a mom who tweets. So why does anyone care? And then two, if you really follow my content, I talk a lot about the things my husband does for me and how well he loves me. And so it's hard for me to imagine that someone like looks at the whole of, you know, my content and is like, this woman clearly needs an intervention. But I can accept that it is that way. And I'm sure nobody, most of these people don't follow me like really close. Although I did ask a friend last night if they thought I had any hate followers. And they were like, is that a joke? So I assume I probably have a
couple. Of course you do. Of course you do. Because you're talking about a lifestyle that is not mainstream. Right? Maybe to you, but I think you have to appreciate that it is not mainstream.
No, it's definitely not mainstream. And it's not even mainstream in the church. Like there are many people that would consider us, I don't know if they would go so far as to call us extremists, but there's a lot of people that identify as what we would call complementarian in the evangelical church. And so they will tell you that they believe in male headship, but oftentimes there's not, you know, real male authority, which is, you know, it varies. There's definitely a spectrum for all of it. But I always tell even people who identify as like patriarchal, you know, your marriage doesn't have to look just like mine for it to be biblical. We have some pretty like hard lines in terms of our responsibilities and duties and all of that kind of stuff. But people get really caught up on things like who does the dishes, or in my experience, at least, like somebody DM'd me the other day and being very like friendly and was just asking like if, you know, I serve him coffee in bed every morning. And we've had coffee in bed. My husband doesn't linger in bed. Normally he wakes up, he gets out of bed. And so it's like, generally no. And what an oddly specific question, but those people really seem to want to know these things.
Well, it makes sense because I think there is this perception that you are your husband's slave, that you don't have any autonomy at all, that you can't make a decision, that you can't do anything, not even take a shower, dress yourself without your husband telling you what to do. And I don't find that to be the case with you. I had assumed that you would be this weak little lamb, but you're really more like a
I appreciate that. Although I am trying every day to perfect my gentle and quiet spirit. It is a struggle.
It will be a struggle. That will be something that you will have to work on for a lifetime. So
absolutely.
At least you have a goal. So.
Yeah. I love that. That's why we call it the Christian walk. It's a walk. You've got to work on it. But so I will let you kind of take the wheels from here and ask your, you know, the questions. Sarah knows what the people want to know. And so we're going to try and give the people there.
Well, good. Because I know that you sort of laughed at the DM that you got. Do you have to serve your husband coffee in bed, or do you serve your husband coffee in bed? And that was what I would consider a phishing message. What they really wanted to ask was, do you have to service your husband, whether it's food, you know, whether you have to ask him permission to go to the grocery store? Do you have to ask your husband permission for everything? Or do you have autonomy to make some of?
Well, for everything, no. We have, generally in our house with our kids too, we have what we call like a whitelist policy, I think is the term. So I definitely ask my husband for anything that would be out of the ordinary. So example, most days I bring him lunch because his shop is on the other side of our property. If I get invited to go to lunch with my friends, that's generally something that's like totally fine, but I'm going to ask him if that's okay, if that works with his schedule, if that's, you know, something that he's good with me doing, because it's outside of the way that we normally do things. But we, you know, in terms of like, can I take a shower? Can I breathe right now? Is it okay if I have a second cup of coffee? Generally, no. You know, unless, I guess, unless there's something going on that I need to ask him if I can take a shower. Like, I don't know, did he just have the water off or something?
Well, for example, you said that you bring your husband his lunch every day. I'm assuming you make it and then you either walk it or drive it to him every day. Is that correct?
Yeah, he bought me an air-conditioned golf cart, so.
Oh, well, look at that. So you, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So you prepare your husband's lunch, you drive it to him every day. Now say, because you have a lot of children. Now say that your youngest child just fell down, skinned his knee, and maybe needs to that needs to be attended to. What's your priority? Do you take care of your child? Tell your husband, sorry, lunch is canceled today. Little Timmy just fell down the well. Or do you say, buck up, little Timmy, we have to get daddy his lunch?
Timmy's just going to have to stand in that well until Tony is done eating his lunch.
I knew
Come
it.
Come on, man. Yeah. This is patriarchy country here. No, like, obviously, my husband would want me to take care of our child first and then bring him lunch, you know. So.
But, you know, we're sort of laughing, but this was a conversation that we had had with a group of women that I'm very close with. Like, where does she draw the line? Where do you draw the line? Are you a wife first and a mother second?
Yes.
Because I will tell you, I don't care about my husband's needs when it comes to my children. I guess I consider myself a mother first and a wife second. So when you say that you're a wife first and a mother second, I would push back and say, how could you prioritize somebody above your children, your flesh and blood?
Well, so my husband is my flesh. Yeah, biblically speaking, the Bible says that a husband will leave his mother and father and cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. That's Genesis 2:24. So if you listen to how I answered, I said my husband would want me to prioritize my child, our child. These are his children too. You know, if our child needs medical attention, that's going to be his top priority too. And that is part of him loving, like that is the, you know, love does not seek its own, insists on its own way. Sorry, I blinked there for a second. So, and also like, he's, I don't know, we're not.
So it's understood. Like it's an understanding between the two of you that you both know that your children would come first because that is what he would have agreed to already,
well,
right?
So, I mean, I don't like the idea of like come first. It's the medical need is the immediate issue. If my children were hungry and my husband needed to go to the emergency room because he, which actually has happened. He cut the tip of his thumb off in his shop while I was making dinner. And I ran out the door and took him to the hospital. Like, what is the priority there?
I sort of feel you know? Like you're the type of woman that would be able to drive your husband to the emergency room, make a sandwich while you're there, and feed all 27 of your children at the same time.
Really?
That's how I view you.
I really consider that to be a great compliment.
That is a compliment.
That
because
is.
I would not be able to do that. I would be like, just feed your thumb to these kids. They're hungry and I can't deal with it right now.
That is, that's not how that night went. I was freaking out about having, you know, picked his thumb up off the shop floor. And not his whole thumb, but just like the tip of it. Oh, it was gross. But,
gosh.
You know, thankfully he was okay.
This is the difference between patriarchy women and a feminist is I would say that's gross. Pick up your thumb and drive yourself to the hospital because I'm too freaked out.
That is
so
cold-blooded.
Which one of us is right?
Cold-blooded. But... in terms back to like, okay, who comes first? So I can't be a good mother if I'm not being a good wife. The marriage relationship has to come first because it sets the tone for the rest of the house. So who's the priority? It's always God, spouse, children. That's the kind of ranking. But we just don't view things that way. And that's kind of one of my issues with a lot of the questions that I get. And I know like you found this probably when we were talking before, because you would ask me a question and it's like, well, that's a complicated answer. It's not a yes or no. Because it oftentimes I find that the questions that people ask me, it puts everyone on this like competition playing field. And that's not how we see things. My family, we are a unit. My husband and I are one. The kids, we're all a unit together. So it's like, who needs to be priority at the moment? Sometimes, I know this will shock everyone, sometimes I am actually the priority. Like, it doesn't happen too often, but it does happen.
Well, I will say this. I was thrilled when you said to some of the questions that I asked when your answer was, well, it's complicated. I assumed every question that I asked, for example, the children thing. If your husband is having an emergency or he wants his sandwich, but your child is ill, who comes first? I just assumed every answer would be my husband, or every question that I asked, you know, leading question that I asked you regarding your husband, everything would be, yes, it's up to him. Yes, yes, it's only him. And when you began answering questions with, well, it's complicated, it's not black and white, that's music to my ears. I don't want to hear, I have to deliver the sandwich to my husband because he demands it, and little Timmy has to stay down the well. Because, Hannah, we laugh and we joke about that, but there are people that believe that you have to deliver that sandwich and your child be damned. And that's not the case.
Well, and that's why we're doing this episode, because it is so hard for me to wrap my brain around the fact that anyone could believe that anyone would live that way and promote that kind of lifestyle, which I'm sure that makes me like very naive. But it's just kind of like that. That's ridiculous. Like, we're very normal people who live normal lives.
Well, you know, was very naive. I consider myself relatively intelligent, and I was very naive. I came into our conversation with, our conversation will last 15 minutes because I won't be able to deal with it. I'll hang up. I'll say, oh, this woman is crazy. End of conversation. And 2 hours later, we're having a conversation and I couldn't get enough of you. I could have listened to you all day because we did have some common ground in our conversations. We do share some of the same values. And anyone that thinks that you are this weak, dumb woman, they are the ones that need to be educated, because you are anything but. You are very intelligent, you're very strong, and you are so well spoken. The only thing that we differ on, really, I guess, is our fundamental beliefs. But I can see you as, I see you as a warm, kind, intelligent woman. I don't see you anymore as some brainwashed little lamb that is stuck in a cult because your husband is forcing you to.
Sometimes I wish I was brainwashed, because it would make submitting easier. It's not really something that I struggle with. too often, but every once in a while, I just want to, you know, be rebellious, I guess. And if I was brainwashed, maybe that would go away.
Well, I could imagine, but we're all like that, right, Hannah? It's not just you. Everybody, no matter what their lifestyle is, wishes that at some point there was an escape route. I often have this fantasy where, you know, I have three children, they're all grown and gone, but I still worry about them. And I have my husband and I have my dogs and I have this life that is, sometimes the rat race is exhausting. My life is exhausting. And sometimes late at night, I will lay there, I'll close my eyes, and I will imagine myself far, far away from everyone, sitting on my own private island and sipping a cocktail all alone. And all of these people are just gone to me. They don't exist anymore. And I think, oh, wouldn't that be nice? That's such a lovely pipe dream. It'll never happen. But it's okay to want that escape. It doesn't make your lifestyle terrible. It just means that you're human. And I think a lot of times people want to demonize you and they don't want to.
I think that's just like Twitter, though. We totally forget that the person on the other side is like a person. Also, just to clarify, I don't, when I say like sometimes I want to be rebellious, I just mean like in that moment. I don't ever want to escape, but like there are times when my husband
has
like.
Way to slap me there, patriarchy, Hannah.
I'm sorry. We can cut that out if you want, but I just wanted to clarify.
It's okay.
That's not what I meant. You know, there's times when Tony has definitely like made decisions I wasn't happy about or whatever. And
okay,
if I was brainwashed,
that's a perfect segue.
So much easier. Okay,
that's a perfect segue. Sometimes Tony makes decisions that you don't agree with. How do you handle that? Do you just go along? Do you gently push back in only a way that you could with him? If he wants to go, I don't know, to Kentucky, but you want to go to Illinois. That's a bad example. Cut that out. What's a good example of when he's made a decision where you've disagreed?
Okay, so when we were in Southern California and he decided we were going to move like more north, I did not want to move and I was so mad about it. Really.
Did he discuss it with you prior to making the decision or was it, hey,
no,
Hannah, we are moving to moving to Northern California and we're doing it on this day. Be prepared. Was that how the conversation?
It wasn't that stark, but like probably 3 months prior to letting me know that we were moving, he said like, FYI, we're going to be moving in the next like short while. So prepare for that. Like as he basically said, like, as soon as you're done with your masters, we're out of here. That's the only reason we're here. And we gotta be somewhere else. And so I was like, yeah, okay. And so I knew it was coming, but basically he came in and said, you know, we're moving to the Bay Area. You know, this is our timetable. At that point, obviously that was when he opened up the floor for me to let me know how I felt about it, but the decision was already made. That was what we were going to be doing. That's not always how we make decisions, but that was how we made that one. And so I fussed about it a bit because I was like, I don't want to do that. I hadn't wanted to move to California in the first place. And I was really hoping that we were going to be moving back this way closer to my family and stuff, but that just wasn't what he thought was best at the time. And you know, I was like kind of grumbling and packing at the same time. I had a really sour attitude about it. And our son, who was, I guess, 11 at the time. So we'd been married about 4 years. Tony has a biological child that I adopted that he had in high school. So our oldest, he would have been about 11. And he started to actually have like a bit of a bad attitude about it and complain about things that it was like, why is this even a complaint for you? That's not even your department. And he'd always been like a very chill child. And so, you know, I guess he let me have my fit for like a week. And then he finally just said, like, this is what we're doing and you need to submit. Like, you are in rebellion right now and you need to repent because you have a terrible attitude. And, you know, so that's what I did.
Well, just to take a little step back and maybe for your editing purposes too. Okay. Can you tell me how you got involved in the patriarchy lifestyle? Let me say that again. Can you tell me how you got involved in the patriarchy lifestyle? Was your husband already part of this? And when you married him, you joined, or did you both share this value and ideology before you?
Okay, so that's kind of complicated too, I guess. So Tony got saved when he was in prison, and I was at that point in time, I was still in high school, and I grew up in church. I grew up in what we would call a complementarian church. So they, you know, subscribe to the idea of male headship, but there's not quite the same hierarchy. It works, it's a bit different. And so this was my husband's, these were my husband's biblical convictions when we got married. And also just generally, that is how I thought that complementarian relationships work too. I thought that we were complementarian. To me, it was normal. I thought that that was what a marriage should look like. But for a long time, I assumed that that's what most Christian marriages looked like, you know, behind closed doors. But he's always been, you know, the one who worked. He's always been the one that has like more, he does have more life experience than me, obviously. And so it is based pretty much purely on biblical convictions. And then as years went on, I realized, like, even within our, you know, comp churches, that it's not the way that it works for like these other people. I had some ladies at the church tell me that I posted about this last night actually, that he was abusive and very controlling because he wouldn't let me go on a women's retreat. And that blew my mind because it was like, what do you mean? Like, your husband never is like, hey, yeah, no, I don't want you to do that. The Bible makes it clear that the husband is the head of the home. It tells wives to submit to their husbands as you submit to Christ. And we submit to Christ in everything. So that there are, you know, commands for the husband as well of how he's supposed to treat his wife. But when it comes down to it, like, your home is your husband's domain. You are part of his kingdom. You are his helpmeet to help him on his mission, the mission that he's decided, you know, is for your family. So yeah, I don't know. Does that answer?
I think it does. So he was not religious before he was, as you put it, saved in prison, but you were, because you grew up sort of believing in male headship.
Yeah. And yeah, he wasn't. He grew up Catholic, but not actually Catholic. And I grew up in like a Southern Baptist church. So I also grew up in a home. My guardian who raised me, he's an atheist, but I would say that he is patriarchal in his own way, although he definitely did not clearly raised me to be some kind of like wilting flower. He insisted that I finish my bachelor's. His goal was always to make sure that I understood what a good man was and what a not good man was, and that I, you know, if I chose to get married, that I end up with a good man, and that if I didn't, that I would be able to support myself, you know, and not end up with like a baby daddy that whose child support I needed to pay my bill.
Well, you know, it's when we talk about religion, and especially for somebody like myself, I don't consider myself to be a religious person. But don't you find it to be the case that everyone seems to find God in a crisis? You know, when my dog was injured this last week, I'm down on my knees praying to a God that I'm not sure exists, that my dog be saved. We're all a little bit, us heathens, I guess, are a little bit hypocritical because we tend to believe in something bigger than us when there is a crisis or that we need to. And yet we can, in that same breath, we'll condemn people that do believe as being crazy, or they don't believe in science, or how could they possibly believe in something bigger than them? What do you think about people that, I guess, use your God to fit their own narrative, but then condemn you because you believe in it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, not just when you have.
Well, the Bible says that all know God, that, you know, those who deny his existence are lying. So I'm not surprised to hear, you know, that you turn to God in a crisis, because I believe that in your heart, you know, he exists. And isn't it in a crisis that we are going to, you know, be the most raw and turn to what is really, you know, written on our hearts? The Bible also says that the law of God is written on our hearts. That's everybody. And so people ask the question of, a lot of times, you know, one of the questions that atheists will ask Christians is, well, can I be a moral person without the Bible or without God? I don't believe that you can truly understand morality without the Bible and God. But in some ways, I do think that most of us inherently know what's right and wrong. And that's because God's law is written on our hearts. And so the fact that as an atheist, I find you to have we don't disagree on a whole lot. And there's a lot of things that you said that really impressed me. And it was like, this is how we would probably handle a similar situation. Like the story about your neighbor's kid in the window. That's probably how my husband would have handled it. You know, just like, hey, come work it off and I'll replace the window. And I'm not saying everyone would just, you know, rage at the kid or whatever, but you knew, even as mad as you were and as annoyed as you were, that being reasonable and loving your neighbor was the right thing to do, as opposed to just going off. You know, where does that knowledge come from if not from God?
Well, I want to correct you a little bit. I wouldn't say I'm an atheist. I would say I'm more agnostic. I don't know. I would say I will not discount that there is not a God. I would not discount that entirely. Because there are things in my own life and people that I know, their lives, that cannot be explained with science, that could only be described as a miracle. And I know that, you know, my mother, for example, who has always been her entire life agnostic, but the closer that she gets to death, the more she has begun believing, and the more she talks about it. And maybe she knows something now that she didn't know when she was young. I'm willing to agree and accept that, because now she talks about when she dies and she gets to be reunited with her mother. When before, she would often talk about dying and then there's nothing. But now there's been a shift, I would say, in the last decade or so. Do you think that people, when they get closer to dying, they want to explain it by believing in a higher power? Or do you believe that we just inherently believe and therefore we're just going back to our
Oof. Okay. So we are Calvinist. And so I would say that that God draws those near that he claims. But I'm sure that as people get closer to death, like there is some amount of, wondering about what goes on the other side, and that, you know, that may lead them to conclusions. But otherwise, I'm probably not qualified to answer that question. That sounds, pretty serious.
I think you answered it, though, originally, where you had said that people in their hearts know that there's a God.
Right. But just because you know doesn't mean that you acknowledge him.
I would agree. And I always ask my religious friends this question, and I'll ask you, and I've never asked it to you before. Do you believe the animals go to heaven? Are there animals in?
I honestly don't know. This is something that gets debated on Christian Twitter relatively, often. I think the general consensus is people say no, but the Bible doesn't actually tell us. I think the reason that people say no is because animals don't have souls, just because an animal doesn't have a soul doesn't mean that God can't decide that the animal is going to be there for you in heaven. So I honestly, I like to think that there is, and I don't think we know specifically, but I am sure that someone is going to write my husband after listening to this and let him know that I am off base with that, because I think the general consensus is no.
I want to say that if God didn't specifically state it in the Bible, that we're going to default to yes, because animals are wonderful and they do have souls. I don't care what anybody says. I look into the eyes of my dog and I see his soul staring back at me. So put that in your bibliarchy and suck it.
Well, you have to understand what we mean by soul. You know, the Bible says that God made man in his image. And so they're animals definitely have personalities and, things like that. But when it comes to the soul, what we're speaking about, that is actually what separates us humans from animals, is that, we have that and they don't. So, I don't know. I find it hard to believe that this gets into a whole discussion of what heaven is and what heaven isn't, and how people misunderstand that. And we can probably kind of have a private conversation about that.
I had no idea, Hannah, that this was a controversy among Christian circles.
Okay. So Christians, people who are really in the word, we love to argue things about theology that there's no answers, and so, or no steadfast answer, and everyone makes their case and it goes back and forth. There's kind of a few that get recycled on Twitter over and over again, and it is hilarious, honestly. But it's not, I don't think this one is actually not one that gets super heated, but we do have a few that can get pretty heated from time to time.
Well, speaking of heated, you take a lot of heat on your Twitter account from Christian Twitter that don't believe that you are practicing the true patriarchy lifestyle. I see the attacks in the replies to your tweets. And I would think that you would be the model for the patriarchy. But according to some, you aren't practicing it as well as you should be. Do you disagree, or do you agree with the people that say that you aren't practicing?
Well, is this from Christians or is this from trads?
I don't exactly know what a trad is, so you would have to explain.
Okay, so there definitely are Christians who push back on some of the stuff I say, and that's fine. My a lot of the people, though, that argue with me and say that I'm, I guess, not submissive enough, is which ultimately everyone should remember. It doesn't matter what you think about our life. My husband is happy with it. And so, like, all that really matters is if he thinks that I'm submissive enough. But there are a lot of trads who, the secular trad movement, I view it as kind of reactionary. There are a lot of young people who are looking around at a lot of the depravity that's going on, and they're like, okay, this is not working. Let's go back to what's more traditional. But a lot of these people are not saved. You know, they're not Christian. And so it, you know, without that, you're missing some essential pieces. And so they tend to be what I would call hyper patriarchal. And that's when you get into like, oh, your husband shouldn't, cons if your husband ever consults you on anything, he's a simp and stuff like that. It's just like, I can't deal with you guys. Your wife should be, I am my husband's most trusted advisor. You
Well,
know, we,
isn't that part of your role to be his most trusted
yes.
advisor? If not you, then who, right?
Yes, absolutely. And I, oh, so most of the time he does want to hear what I have to say about things, like what just my general opinion is, you know, because he considers me to be an intelligent person. But even if he doesn't want my opinion, like he oftentimes will say, hey, I want to do this. Look up different ways that that can happen. Do I do the research for him often because I'm the one with more free time. And so a lot of times in doing the research, I've already kind of come to a conclusion about what probably is the best way to go about it. And again, it's not a competition. We are working towards the same goals. And so you what we're both working towards is like, what is the best way to do it? There's very rarely things that are framed in my way or his way. You know, that's just when you focus on we are two that have become one, it really changes the whole dynamic of how you view a marriage. And so it's you know, but he likes to, you know, hear what I have to say about different stuff, what I think. There's a lot of decisions he makes, though, that it's like, I literally just don't know. Please don't ask me. I have no opinion here. Why are you asking me?
I think you said it best when you said that you guys are happy. Is that how you would describe ultimately your relationship, that you're
Think, yeah, definitely. We're both happy. And we're both content.
and really, who am I? Who is anyone to judge your relationship when you're both happy?
Well, for sure. I do open myself up for it, obviously, by sharing as much as I do on Twitter, which was never my original intent of being on Twitter. But here we are.
Well, you know, I have shared bits and pieces of our conversation with some of my more feminist friends and said, listen, she's not this crazy out there cultist. And I think many of them are surprised at how intelligent and how funny and how easygoing you are, and how willing you are to share. I think that you could do an entire series of patriarchy Hannah versus the feminists. And I think it could be actually really great because there are people that I can't challenge you. I like you too much. And I don't want to hurt you or be offensive. And therefore, I don't think I'm maybe the best person to challenge you. Now, 3 weeks ago, sure, not before having any conversation with you, I probably could have, but I like and respect you
There's
far too much to, I guess, challenge.
There's honestly not a lot, I think, that you could say or do or ask that would offend me. I don't know. Like, we've had enough conversations. I feel like I would know that you're coming from a good place. But ultimately, like, I don't, this is how we believe that marriage was prescribed by God. And so if you're not a Christian, if you are not, if you're not a Christian, if you're not in a biblical marriage, if you are not in a healthy marriage with a healthy man, there's many factors that would make my tweets not apply to you. You know, if your husband is abusive, submitting to him more is not going to help it. It's not going to fix it. And so that's not what you need to be doing. I'm not equipped to tell you exactly what you need to do, except get yourself to a safe place. But, you know, you don't need to try and make your marriage look anything like mine because you have like a whole different thing going on. And outside of like a biblical Christian marriage, probably a lot of my advice wouldn't, not advice even, but just the way that we operate, it's probably not going to work quite the same.
I would agree. I want to ask you another quick piece,
Yeah.
and then I have to go. But this was, I think, for me the most shocking, and I think for editing purposes, I worry because
No,
how you're going to
just
handle
go,
this
just
with
go.
editing purposes. Okay. My question to you, Hannah, is what happens if Tony is no longer around? What happens to you? Can you function without Tony telling you exactly what to do and how to live? Or do you just flounder and you cannot function? Say there was a tragic accident and he passed away. What happens to you? What happens to your family without him telling you?
So I would say first, technically speaking, my husband gets his commands about how we're going to live from the Bible. So the Bible's not going to change whether my husband is alive or dead. So in terms of how I live, it would probably look a lot similar, but I would probably wear more black because I would be sad because my husband was gone. But you know, beyond that, I, you know, obviously as a responsible, loving husband, like he's set up ways that I would be financially taken care of and would be able to continue to raise our children in the way that we think is appropriate and best. And you know, I it would suck a lot, but I would be okay.
Are you required by your religion or your religious beliefs to then find another man for headship?
Technically speaking, no, and yes. Not re required is not the right word. There is a verse in the Bible that says that younger widows should get remarried and that older widows should focus on, you know, ministering to younger women. And then there's another verse that says that widows are, you know, over themselves, I believe is the correct verse. So I'm definitely not required. I can't imagine myself married to anyone else, and I don't know that I would want to, but I would still have male headship, I think, in my life, meaning like male headship is just something that exists. Like it's one of the things I say a lot is patriarchy is inevitable. And so it's like, I don't know, there's just a lot of things that I wouldn't know how to do, but my brothers, I have brothers, older brothers. You know, Tony's got older brothers that he does business and stuff with. So I'm, you know, there would still be some kind of like headship, maybe not as involved in my day-to-day life, but in terms of, you know, probably helping me with like finances, managing that kind of stuff. Like I would definitely need assistance. But it's a silly person who says like, "Oh, I could just do all of this on my own without taking any advice." That would be, you know, that's a silly point of view.
I would agree with that, that it's a silly point of view to think that you or anyone could just manage, especially when you've been part of a team for so long. I find it interesting that there would be other people that would step in. For example, you said his brother or his brothers or your brothers, but they wouldn't necessarily fill that role. They wouldn't fill the role of your husband. They would be more like advisors.
Well, yeah, I mean, they don't have any real authority to tell me what to do, per se, but why I can't imagine bucking against them too much, because these are men in my life who want the best for me. And I, honestly, like, my oldest brother is like a little scary, so I probably would listen, but yeah, I mean, they wouldn't just like become my husband. That's not really, I don't know, that would be weird.
I think that would be weird, but I think that's a common ideal among people that don't understand, would be that if your husband is not around, or if he's passed away, that you would automatically have to have somebody fill that role, and quite soon, because you would not be capable of managing by.
If one of my brothers-in-law or my oldest brother stepped in and said, okay, so I'm just going to take over making sure that your utility bills get paid and that the phone bill gets paid and all of that stuff, I would 100% allow them to take that over because I don't know anything about paying bills. But could I do it on my own if I needed to? I am sure that I could. But why would I want to? It sounds late.
I have no doubt that not only could you function on your own, that you would probably do it better than any feminist.
I appreciate that so much, Queen.
You would do it better. You could do it better than me. Because, Hannah, you have said several times that submitting to your husband is not easy, that it's not always just this turning everything over to somebody. Doesn't sound like the easy lifestyle that maybe in my head it would be. It sounds like it could sometimes be a difficult.
It can be difficult in the sense of, like, you know, when he's made it, like, the California decision, like, the moving, I didn't want to move. The impulse is to try and change his mind to, you know, at least just, like, fuss about it a lot and, I don't know, cry. Sometimes you get that, you know, can I kind of manipulate or maneuver the situation to be more what I want. And those are the times when I really have to submit my will to God's will. And it doesn't matter if what my husband is doing is God's will, at so much as in terms of from my perspective, I'm not saying like, oh, my husband knows exactly what God wants, but God has told me that his will is that I submit to my husband. That's what the Bible says. And so in me submitting, I am doing God's will. And then if Tony's off base, that's actually between him and God. And now, just for the record, for anyone listening, because I'm sure this could get fully distorted, there are limitations to that, for sure.
Well, has there ever been a time where he's made a decision and you have changed his mind? Or is his authority up?
Well, his authority is absolute, but he's not, like, he's not a tyrant. There have been times when he's come in and said, we're going to do this. And I've said, okay, I submit to that. But also, have you considered these other things that I think might change your mind? And then he's like, oh, I actually did not know that. Okay, yeah, let's do it this way instead. Or how would you, you know, what do you think about a better way to go about it, you know, now that I'm aware of these other factors? So, you know, I mean, it's just really not that, I feel like people picture it as very
tyrannical.
Right. Well, and very intense all the time and stuff. And I don't know, most of our conversations are just very casual, very chill, you know, just talking about things. And then he, you know, most of the time, you know, I'm helping him gather information, and that information often includes, you know, my point of view on the subject. And then, you know, he goes off and he makes a decision. Sometimes we don't agree, and sometimes we, there have been plenty of times when, you know, we've discussed a major decision that needs to be made. We're not coming to any kind of, you know, agreement that day. And so we just say, okay, we're going to shelve this for a couple of days. We're going to pray. We're both going to pray, you know, get into scripture, and, you know, we'll reconvene on this in a couple of days. And he'll come back and say, okay, I've actually prayed about it and thought about it and looked into these other things. And I actually think that you were right about this. So we're going to do it that way. So it's, but again, this is not about feeding my husband's pride. This is about him leading our family and deciding the best way to do that. And sometimes I have ideas that he doesn't think about, you know? So it would be a foolish man that would discount what his wife says just because he doesn't want to admit that she had a better idea than him.
I think those are wise words that I would even live by. My husband and I, we consult each other on decisions. We listen to each other. Ultimately, who ends up making the decision, that's where it's up in the air in my relationship. Sometimes I do, sometimes he does. And that, I think that's the major difference between.
But who washes the dishes, Sarah? Who washes the dishes?
I wash the dishes. I wash the dishes. Whoa. I do the cooking. Whoa. I do the laundry. I know. Feminist. I know. I can't even call myself a I can't call myself a feminist now, can I? Because I'm washing dishes and making my husband dinner.
Come get your girl. You're losing.
I just do it because he is incapable of doing a good job. Now, maybe that's just ingrained in him because he's a man, or he's trying to teach me all about the patriarchy. I haven't decided yet.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe you're a nagging wife who can't appreciate the way he does it.
I am a nagging wife. I will say that. He does call me. He does say that if nagging were an Olympic sport, I would take home the gold. So.
That is funny. Somebody,
he is right.
Somebody told my husband one time, like, oh man, I bet when Hannah's unhappy that's like, you know, she's a spitfire. And Tony was like, well, why would she be unhappy?
Oh, oh my God. Like, that is the greatest,
you know, thing. And the guy was like, I know, he's so funny. Like, he's so to the point, you know, but the guy was like, I don't know. She just seems like, you know, she'd be wilding out, like, if she was unhappy. And my husband was just like, in whose house? Like, what are you talking? My wife does not act like that. Like, that is poor behavior. Here she's like, not, but the also, I mean, I just tell, if I'm unhappy, I just tell my husband. Like, I think a lot of things get very misconstrued. But I would say my husband is probably more aware of my feelings about things than most people's husbands. And it's because I feel fully free to express myself anyway. And a lot of women who ask me about things, it's their husbands don't want to listen to them at all. But the difference is, like, I don't nag, and I just kind of say it once, and I try not to be super emotional about it. I posted something on Twitter the other day that was like, you know, I get much further when I practice direct speech. So if something happened that upset me, or if, I don't know, even if he's made a decision that I didn't like, if, you know, something that I wasn't consulted about, it's totally fine for me to say, like, just FYI, I don't like this. I'm not complaining. I submit to it. But I just need you to hear me that I don't like it. And he will say, I hear you. This is why, you know, I did it. And I hope you come around. You know, I'm sorry that you're unhappy, but this is what we're doing. But I do hope you come around. But he's more than happy to listen to me about it, you know? And so it's, I don't know. Like, this is, it is easy in many ways to have a marriage dynamic like this, in my opinion, because it's God's way. This is how God designed it. And so we very easily fall into these roles. My husband knows that I'm submitting to what he's decided. So what does it hurt for him to hear me out? He knows that I'm not going to be pitching this like giant fit, or he's not going to have to deal with like a big crying fest. It doesn't hurt him to listen to me, and he loves me. So he, you know, he wants to hear my thoughts on things.
I love that. I think that my husband has never had a moment where he didn't know where what I was feeling. He always knows. I think he wishes that I had an unexpressed thought. I've never had an unexpressed thought in my entire life.
That's so funny. If I'm like thinking really hard sometimes, like Tony will look over at me and he'll be like, give me that, you know, and I'll say, you know, what are you talking about? And he's like, those are my thoughts. Like, give me that. So, you know, he's funny though. He just likes to, he thinks the way that I think is really interesting to him, because we do look at things a lot differently. And I consider, you know, factors that he doesn't. Some, there are times when he's like, whew, that's exhausting. Like, turn that off. You're thinking about it way too much. You know,
I get it. I'm the same way, but I think that, gosh, Hannah, I think that if you had more conversations like this, if you could in some way have these conversations, where people got to know who you are as a person, the idea of you, the idea of your patriarchy lifestyle would be much more normalized. Because I find you to be absolutely delightful. I couldn't imagine you receiving any hate or cruelty if people actually had a conversation.
Oh, I'm sure it would come. I do. Isn't it always funny when you meet people on Twitter or you see them and you're like, this person is just not right. And then you kind of, you meet them in a space or you talk to them and you're like, it humanizes them. And when you think back then, you're like, I can't believe that's what I thought.
Well, that's person. Exactly what you I know, thought of you. I sit here and I think, I can't believe I thought that she was in some weird sex cult and that she could not escape her husband, and I was going to come in with my feminist cape, swoop in and save you, and I would be the hero. You don't need saving.
I do not. And ladies almost never save the day in patriarchy country. So that is not how things roll
here. Oh, man. I was going to dismantle the patriarchy one cape at a time. And now you've burst my bubble. So
sorry, queen. You'll have to find another.
Maybe another, I'll get your project. Child that's down the well while you're making your husband a sandwich. Maybe right, that's how yeah. I'll save the day.
Yeah. Timmy's fine. He's fine. Okay.
He's fine. He can hold for a couple yeah, hours while you're husband.
He needed a bath anyway, obviously. So it's I would say we definitely should do this again.
Definitely.
And you know, if you notice, there's like 7 spots here. So we had talked at one point, hold on, I'm just going to stop recording now. No, never mind. I'll just leave it and cut it out. We had talked about it, whatever. I'm going to cut this out. But we had talked about one point I had said, you know, like, invite your feminist friends in this space. And you were like, I don't know. I don't want it to get hostile. But like, if they'd be willing, we could do it here. And I mean, honestly, like, I would love that. If you think that they'd be willing, don't worry about them hurting me. I'm just wondering if they would be willing to do it.
I'm so sorry. Our little baby puppy got stuck in the blanket. My husband was trying to rescue him. I'm so sorry.
No, you're good.
I guess I needed a man to rescue my puppy.
Yeah, is the puppy okay?
The puppy's fine. He just wrapped himself up in a blanket. He's only 8 days old. But would you be willing if I could get some of my more militant feminist friends? Would you be willing to have a conversation with them and sort of like a ask me anything, but keep it respectful?
Yeah, that's literally what I was just saying. That like, if you'll notice, there's missed. Seven spots here.
So
yeah. I was saying like, you know, so there's, I've got spots for seven co-hosts. So I would want you to be there, just to sort of like, not really moderate, but a little bit, you know. And since you know everyone involved, but if you wanted to bring six friends, like I would do it here. This probably would be better than on a space.
I would agree, because then you'd have to deal with commentary, and commentary in spaces sometimes shifts the conversation. But when I said they would keep it respectful, they would. It wouldn't be this confrontational thing. Where you're in a position to have to defend your lifestyle. Nobody should have to defend their lifestyles, even if they're happy, or even if they're unhappy. But I think that it would be great, because there's so many questions that people have that really don't understand.
Yeah, I would totally love that. I would absolutely love to do that. Please, like, ask them if they would, and I can work around their schedules. Let me go ahead and record the outro so that we can like wrap this up real quick. All right, you guys, that's gonna wrap up my conversation with Sarah for today. I do hope that it has been a good reminder that even on Twitter, even when it's people that don't believe anything like we do, that generally speaking, unless it's a bot, what is on the other side of that screen is a person, and that that person has like a unique story. And, you know, so try not to like judge too much, because of course I judge Sarah too a little bit. And I'm going to go ahead and read Tony's disclaimer, and then we are going to get out of here for today. But Sarah will be back. We will be doing something like this again. So before we go, I will just remind our listeners that all of the thoughts and opinions expressed here belong to the person who spoke them and their husbands. But as with everything in patriarchy country, this episode has been husband approved. So you can direct any of your complaints or misgivings straight to the man himself. Tony is at What's Good It's Tea on Twitter, and he joined specifically for this reason. So feel free to direct any of your ire to him, and he will promptly remind you that he runs his house as he sees fit. And I will add here, if you are listening and you have an issue with anything that Sarah said, and you come from kind of my camp, if you choose to interact with her in a disrespectful manner, I will block you, and Tony will give you the look of shame. So we love Sarah, and we appreciate her openness to, you know, to confront something that she didn't understand. And this is what we want more of. So, Sarah, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me, Hannah. And anybody that does take issue with anything that I say, I do want to say that I and my questions come from a good place. They don't come from a place where I'm trying to change her or rescue her. They do come from a good place, and Hannah holds a very special place in my heart. Thank you.
Aww. Thank you. Yes. And I don't think you said anything that people could misinterpret. But I know that your questions and everything come from like a good place of wanting to understand. And I just wouldn't want anyone to take it wrong or whatever. I don't know. You never know what overzealous people on Twitter are going to do.
Exactly. So. Oh my gosh. Hey, this one for the homemakers. Hey, this one for the homemakers. Hey, hey, dance if you a homemaker. Hey, hey, this one for the homemakers. 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 This one.
This is for the homemakers.